Bottom of the hour is come and gone. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Dave Mnookin in studio. Ezra Ginsberg returns and literally just tripped and fell over his chair as he was rushing into the studio after reheating his coffee for the fourth time this morning. Are you okay? As you get your headphones on, you get your microphone set up. Yeah. Are you okay?
Yeah, I just wiped out there.
Yeah, I know you just wiped out.
Really,
there.
It's a shame we don't have the wipeout music.
It's true. It's a shame that we don't have a live camera that would, you know, we could true. Play that to Yakety Sax for the next hour and a half instead.
Well, I tripped over my laptop cord and then hit the wheel of the chair, but I'm okay. Notice that neither of you guys tried to help me up there.
No, I was quite happy letting you lie there on the ground. In any event, there really is no better or more fitting intro than to welcome our next, than Ezzy tripping over a chair, than to welcome our next guest.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Our old friend Anthony Sanfilippo from 610 AM in Philadelphia joins us on the program. And Anthony, one, very good to hear from you. And two, are you the least bit surprised that the intro for your segment on the show features Ezzy tripping and falling over something?
No, because I've seen Ezzy trip and fall over himself many times in the past. Perfect. How are you guys? I miss you.
We missed you too, Anthony. How are you, buddy?
Good. Happy 8th anniversary.
Thank you very much. We couldn't have an anniversary program without having you on air to break down everything to do with the Philadelphia Flyers. And I got to say, Anthony, when we first became acquainted with one another, you were a frequent guest on the program. Almost, it seemed like a bi-weekly guest because there was so much drama back around the Flyers, you know, going back 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. It's a little bit boring around the Philadelphia Flyers now that, you know, Bobby Clark has shuffled off into retirement and that, you know, Ron Hextall and Dave Hackstall are running what seems to be just a very calm and a very professional organization with none of the highs and lows that we expect from the Philadelphia Flyers.
You're exactly right, and it's why they're stuck being a fringe playoff team, and nothing is changing over the course of the past 3 seasons, really, pretty much since Hextall took over as general manager. This team is very ordinary. There are some nights where they look great. There are some nights where they look flat-out awful, and you're never as good as your best game, and you're never as bad as your worst game. So if they're that inconsistent, they're probably smack dab in the middle. And, oh, look, they've played 52 games, won 26, lost 26. That's what this team is. They're just a mediocre hockey team with not a lot of excitement around them, and that's kind of a shame. It's kind of a surprise here in Philadelphia because we're not used to that. We're used to there being either you're really competitive or you're not competitive, but there's still a lot of drama, and there's nothing. I mean, it's just kind of blah, to be honest with you.
Anthony, what's going on with Flyers defenseman Shane Gott's despair? He was a finalist for the Calder Trophy last year, and he was a healthy scratch last game, and he's been a healthy scratch before this season. Is this just tough love from Dave Hackstall?
Yeah, it is, and he's going to be a healthy scratch, I think, again today against Los Angeles. He's not. Look, expectations were probably a little too high for him coming into this season off of last season. I've been screaming to anybody who will listen to me that what you saw from Shane Gostisbehere last year was a bit of an anomaly. Yes, the kid is a very gifted, offensive-minded player. But he was exceptional because the Flyers controlled puck possession a lot more last year than they had this year. So this year he's being forced to play a little bit more defense, to carry the puck more out of his zone, and he makes mistakes, young player mistakes, things that he has to learn. And he's had stretches of games where he's looked like the Shane Gostisbehere of last year, but he's also had stretches of games where he's not the Shane Gostisbehere of last year, not even close. And I think what you're seeing I know plus minus is not a big number anymore. It's not something that anybody likes to talk about because there's so many more advanced statistics. But when you look at a guy who's minus 19, that's pretty bad, really. I mean, that's especially for a defenseman. That means that you're pretty much, you know, defensemen usually the plus minus. If you're a minus, it means you're on the ice for a lot of goals against you, and he's really struggled. And so I think that they really want him to kind of work on some things in the defensive end. I still think he's going to be an okay player, maybe even a better than okay player. But he's never going to be a great defensive player. And that's where I think everybody kind of got lost behind the fact that he was a really good offensive player, because he's just missing that. I kept comparing him last year, guys, to Mike Green. I kept looking at him saying, this guy reminds me a lot of what Mike Green was. And, you know, there's something, a lot of things to like about Mike Green, and there's a lot of things to not like about Mike Green. So in the grand scheme of things, Gostis Bear's probably a second pair defenseman who can run your power play, and you should be happy with that.
Anthony, Philadelphia has allowed the most goals against in the Eastern Conference. Is that symptomatic of poor defensive play or poor goaltending?
It's a little bit of both, to be honest with you. I mean, Neuvert's had some injuries. Obviously, he's only played 16 games this year. Mason has been pretty much the go-to guy. And when Neuvert was hurt, Mason was fantastic. I mean, Mason was phenomenal during the Flyers' 10-game win streak earlier in the year. But he just feels, I don't know if it's a mental thing with him, but anytime Neuvert is there and available, it's almost like Mason has a little bit of a mental block. And we've seen this before, not necessarily in Philadelphia, but we saw it in Columbus. And you see that, you know, there's just something that's not right there. I mean, you can't have goalies with, you know, goals against averages around 3 and save percentages below 90. That's just not acceptable in today's NHL. That said, there are a lot of times where they're left hung out to dry. Because in all honesty, with the exception of Ivan Provorov, who I will tell you, even though he's a rookie defenseman, is the real deal. This kid will be a star player. He will be an all-star defenseman in the NHL. He's played logs the most minutes on defense, and he's only 19 years old. He's really going to be good. But with that exception, there's not a true solid defenseman on this team. I mean, Mark Streit's getting a little older. He was never a great defensive defenseman. Gudas is okay. I mean, again, depth guy. But beyond that, it's just awful to trot out Andrew McDonald, Nick Schultz. I mean, these guys are Michael Delzato has had an awful year this year. And there's just nobody on defense. Now, for the fortunately for the Flyers, they drafted a bunch of young defensemen. Ron Hextall's gotten a lot of credit for the defensemen he has in the system. And if you look at the AHL standings, Lehigh Valley Phantoms, who are the Flyers' affiliate, are one of the best teams, if not the best team in the AHL, could win the Calder Cup. And that's on the backs of a strong defense that is coming. So there are players that are on their way, but I just worry that their development down in the AHL is not going to translate for the NHL in the sense that by the time they're really comfortable being a top six group in the NHL, I'm not sure your star forwards are still going to be as relevant as they are right now. So I think the timing is a little off of trying to get these two things together for the Flyers.
Sorry, I got to say, just having Anthony back on the show and talking Flyers it's music to my ears.
Anthony Sanfilippo of 610 AM in Philadelphia, our guest on the program. Anthony, just a quick update. When Ezzy tripped over his chair and fell, he also managed to turn the fan on in the studio. So we had some cold air blowing, despite it being about 15 degrees below zero here in Winnipeg. So, you know, just so you know that the complete gong show is continuing as you'd expect.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my favorite gong show of all time. I still tell stories. I hung out with you guys in Winnipeg once. I think we've hung out a couple times elsewhere, but in Winnipeg once, and it was one of my favorite all-time road trips that I ever took was coming up there to the Peg to hang out with you guys.
And yeah, we were at it was the Grove where we were at.
Well, that too. I mean,
It was a good time, certainly. Anthony, you look at you spoke about the Flyers' goaltending in the last answer, and you look at it for next season, and both Mason and Neuvirth are unrestricted free agents. Can the Flyers become the first team in NHL history to be paying a buyout to Ilya Bryzgalov and then re-sign him?
I don't see that coming, but I'm curious to see what they end up doing. I don't think Steve Mason will be back. I think that ship has sailed a little bit. And I'm a little concerned. I mean, Anthony Stolarz, who was their top goaltending prospect, is playing well for the Phantoms. He was up with the Flyers. They only gave him a couple starts during that long stretch. And Mason was playing, I think he played it was something like 19 out of 21 games. And I'm just curious as to why that is. Like, why not give the kid a few? So I'm not saying you had a split time, but maybe instead of two starts, get five or six. So you really get to see how he is in a more of a regular flow at the NHL level. That, coupled with the fact that they drafted Carter Hart last year, tells me that maybe they're not quite sold on Stolarz as a number one goalie in the NHL. So I really think that the Flyers are going to be goaltending shopping again for one goalie. I think Stolarz will be on the roster next year as a backup competing, and I think you'll see the Flyers try and bring somebody else in to be a guy who's like kind of a bridge until Hart's ready to go. I think you're talking somebody maybe on a 2 or 3 year deal, not your top line guy, and see what happens. I think that's kind of where they're headed. Because again, even if you bring up the young defensemen that are in the NHL, Sam Moran, Robert Hogg, Travis Sanheim, even if you bring these guys up next season, you know it's going to take them a little bit of time. I mean, defensemen don't just come in their first year and succeed unless you're a very special player. These guys are going to need a couple seasons. So why spend big money on a goaltender if it's going to be another 2 to 3 years before you're really competing for a top spot in the conference? And I think that's kind of where they are.
Anthony, has the best story for the Philadelphia Flyers this year been the play of Wayne Simmonds and him winning the All-Star MVP and picking up that Honda Ridgeline truck?
Well, it kind of has been. I think, again, Simmonds is one of those guys that maybe doesn't, you know, register as a quality player, like a real big-time player league-wide. I think people know who he is, but, you know, he's always known more for his physical play and he's a power play goal scorer. But Simmonds actually brings a lot more to his game than most people realize. So it was nice to see him, especially in the format that you have at the All-Star game, where it's 3-on-3, where you wouldn't think a guy like him would flourish, to come out and score, you know, three goals, including the game winners in both halves of the All-Star game, and to win the MVP. Really kind of, and then you get to see his personality. He's got a great personality. He's a real, you know, nice ambassador for the sport for a lot of reasons. But, you know, it's good to see him get the credit that maybe he deserves, because he's been doing this in Philadelphia for several seasons now. And really, he is, this season, I think, their MVP. Giroux's having a down year. Voracek's just been Voracek. So I think Simmonds has been their best player, and you know, to get the recognition, he deserves it.
And Anthony, he was the first Flyer since Reggie Leach in 1980 to win MVP at the All-Star game.
That's true. And it's interesting because, you know, when you think about it, I mean, you know, back, if you go through the 80s and 90s, Flyers had a ton of All-Stars. I mean, you know, those 90s teams, everybody was there. Lindros, LeClaire, Desjardins, Brind'Amour, they were all there together, and none of them ever won an All-Star Game MVP. So, it's kind of a cool thing, you know. And you know, I don't think Philadelphians appreciate the All-Star Game as much as maybe some other cities do. They just kind of look at it as it's just an All-Star Game, right? I mean, we're a little jaded here. Surprise, surprise. I think it's a cool thing. I think it's cool for Wayne, and it's good PR for not only him, but for the entire team.
Anthony, they call it the city of brotherly love, but is there a lot of love right now for if this team isn't able to do something in the playoffs or even make the playoffs?
You know what? I'm surprised. And I got to be honest, I think that the younger generation now, the millennials in this city, they surprise me with how soft they are. Because if you look at other sports too, you know, the Sixers went through this whole thing where they were tanking for 4 years, mm-hmm. and now all the young fans are going to the games, they're chanting, trust the process, and yet the team's still 15 games under 500, they're not going to make the playoffs. When did we start accepting mediocrity? I don't understand when that happened. That has never been a Philadelphia thing. And I think that when you look at where the Flyers are, they've been stagnant for a while. I mean, it's got to be 5-6 years they've been about the same year in and year out, fighting to just get into the playoffs, and if they get in, potentially, you know, have a first round series that's interesting, but they don't win it. I mean, they haven't won a playoff series since 2011. So we're talking like, you know, this is something that's really kind of crazy in this town. And yet Hextall and Hackstall, maybe Hextall even more, gets a pass. And I understand Ron Hextall has done a nice job with the draft. He's really good at finding those young players that are going to be good NHL players, which is what a GM should be able to do. He shed the team of some really awful contracts that Paul Holmgren had in place beforehand, did a nice job with that. I'm not certain that he's managing the current roster properly, though. The free agents that he's brought in have not been good in any season, really, when you look at it. He doesn't really make trades. I mean, he's made a couple just to shed salary, but nothing that's going to improve the team, really. And he's taken way too long allowing these young kids to get into the lineup. I'd rather, you don't think you're a Stanley Cup caliber team, I'd rather you take a step back and let the kids play than sit there and try and muddle through in mediocrity until eventually, hopefully, you get lucky 6-7 years down the road. I don't think that's a great plan, and yet we seem to be accepting it in this city, which blows my mind. I don't understand where it came from. I don't understand the mentality. You know, everybody, I guess, is so gung-ho to get a championship that they figure, oh, I'm willing to put up with 6 to 10 years of mediocrity or poor play, as it was for the Sixers, mediocrity or poor play, with the notion that I might win a championship within the next decade. I don't understand where that ideology comes from, but yet that's the world we live in today.
Anthony Sanfilippo is with 610 AM in Philly. Anthony, send us a Philly cheesesteak. We'll send you the Illegal Curve sandwich.
What's the Illegal Curve sandwich?
Well, funny you should ask. The Illegal Curve sandwich is toasted thick-cut city rye bread, honey mustard, chicken schnitzel, fried salami, fried onions, and cheddar cheese. It is fantastic. And when you're next in Winnipeg, we will take you out for an Illegal Curve sandwich.
That sounds good, but I just had that for lunch yesterday.
Yeah. Anthony, it's good to hear from you again.
Hey, boys, anytime.
Take care. Thanks very much.
You got it.
Let's head to break. When we return, we'll talk about the latest on the Olympic participation. The NHL, the NHLPA, the IOC, the IIHF had a big meeting yesterday. Did anything come of it? We'll talk about it next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. For the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Anthony Sanfilippo for joining us. This segment of the program, it's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, as we were just discussing with Anthony. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Perhaps you're looking for a place to watch this afternoon's game. Bernstein's Deli, 5 big screen TVs, drink specials, Illegal Curve sandwiches. That sounds to me like a delightful way to spend a Saturday afternoon.
You know, Drew, producer Adam Toy just came in, Adam Toy of Hustler and Lawless.
Yes.
And he was actually one of the first people to be involved with Illegal Curve back on Red River Kick FM.
It's a stain that still is on his reputation.
Yeah, because we were both students at Red River. So Adam's going to come back before Hustler and Lawless towards the end of the show and have a little cake.
Is he going to have a lot of cake? Because there's still enough cake for 24 people. We've still eaten 0 pieces of cake. And there still are only 4 people in the studio at the present moment.
Yeah, it's a big cake, Drew.
It's a big cake. It's a very large cake. A very large deal in the hockey world is that regarding the upcoming Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea.
Well, the NHL wants to have their cake and eat it too.
Oh, well done. Bravo.
Segue.
Finally, after 8 years, you're pulling your weight. Yesterday in New York City, the Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, IOC President Thomas Bach, IIHF.
Hold on, what?
Thomas Bach.
Okay.
I don't know. Is it Bach or Bach?
I would just say Thomas Bach.
Okay.
Sounds like someone's on a sheep farm for a second. Go on.
IIHF president.
I'm just wondering
president
if he's related to Sebastian.
Nice. IIHF president Rene Fassel, and Donald Fehr of the NHLPA all got together to discuss the NHL's upcoming participation in the Olympics in 2018. By the sounds of it, nothing came out of the meeting in terms of specifics. It was more of a quote-unquote courtesy call. But we are approaching know, they have to make a decision really within the next month.
Well, true, the Olympics are a year from now.
Right, so they have to make a decision in the next month. Yeah. What's most interesting to me, though, not so much that these guys met, is that you have players and owners who have already come out and said, and have backed, you know, Ted Leonsis in Washington is specifically who I'm speaking about, has said that if the NHL chooses not to go to the Olympics, Alex Ovechkin has said he's going to go regardless. And Ted Leonsis, the owner, has backed his player in this instance. So you have the NHL.
And Backstrom.
He also and Nicholas Backstrom. He's going to let anybody that wants to go from his team.
Right, but Backstrom just came out recently.
Right, Braden Holtby said he wouldn't go if the NHL doesn't shut down. You might have a mishmash situation where some teams allow their players to go, some teams don't, and you're going to have a quality of play in the NHL that is not truly, you know, representative of the players that each team possesses if some of them are playing overseas at the Olympics. This has turned into it's a very big game of chicken between the NHL and the IOC and the IIHF, but I don't see how the NHL is really winning on this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know if anybody's winning right now because I think most fans would love to see NHL players play in the Olympics. We've seen it since 1998. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's essentially 20 years now since we first saw NHL participation in the Olympics in Nagano, right, Dave? Because we used to see Canada's national team, you know, at the Olympics, and it was a different type of excitement because it was amateur players. But now because the NHL has participated in the last, I guess, five Olympics, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Four or five Olympics, Winter Olympics. Now fans are expecting to see NHL players there. So, you know, you mentioned Eric Duhatchik had a really good article a couple of days ago in the Globe and Mail about this situation. And you mentioned the meeting yesterday, and we don't expect any type of, you know, solution here coming up in the next week, probably in the next month. But, you know, to me, Drew, I think you have a group of NHL owners that don't really want to go to the Olympics. And they don't make any money from the Olympics. And they don't necessarily want to shut down their league so that players can go there and pursue a gold medal. And then you have some owners who say, well, you know, we could really grow our game in South Korea and China. This is a big Asian market here. You know, let's shut down the NHL schedule. And by the way, apparently they're making two schedules. One,
they've already made it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I've said all along, I think that the NHL is going to go to the Olympics, but I don't know, you know, right now if it's looking like the NHL is going to go to the 2018 Winter Olympics, because right now it seems like there is a divide. And eventually, you know, you're going to have a decision. Gary Bettman's going to have to go to the owners and say, okay, are we doing this? And the NHLPA. I think it's pretty.
The IOC, and they hold the balls in their court. They could say to the NHL, if you're not going to 2018, you're not invited to 2022.
Well, to me,
that's where the NHL wants to be, is 2022 in Beijing.
Yeah, and
Do they? No, they do. If they do, then Dave, why would you take 2018 off?
Because they're stupid.
No, they're not stupid. They're trying to use your talk about, you were talking about earlier, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. The reality is they don't want to go because they don't see it as beneficial, but they do see China because of the market and the opportunity there to expand the game.
So if they're watching in 2022 in China, they're going to be watching in 2018 in South Korea.
No.
It's the same television markets, more or less. I mean,
but remember, because the NHL doesn't really care about the television market so much. It's what kind of benefit can they get or derive from the Olympics? Because remember, they're not getting the revenue. So really, you're trying to think, okay, what kind of growth?
They want eyeballs. They want people watching hockey and falling in love with hockey. They want to turn China into a hockey-loving country, and you can start that in 2018.
They want them to buy merchandise and all that
stuff.
Well,
you can start that in 2018, and you can seal that in 2022 with the Olympics there.
I think, first of all, I think that you're 100% right, Drew. I think that's what you have to do to have that sort of continuity to keep it going. I don't think you can just pick and choose and say, you know what, we don't want to go there, we're not going to go there, but we will go in 2022. To me, if the NHL says to the Olympics, we're not going to go in 2018, but we're going to go in 2022, I'd say you're not welcome back.
Yeah.
I'd say, no thanks. You're not picking and choosing when you want to. Like, this is you're either part of the Olympics or not. And there's been suggestions to move them to the Summer Olympics so it doesn't impact the NHL. No, I'm just saying because it's indoor.
Sorry. I don't know who brought up that idea.
I'm just saying because basketball is a quote-unquote summer sport.
Right.
Or because basketball is in the Summer Olympics. The difference is you can play basketball outside
in
the summer.
Of course. That's why
you can't play hockey outside in the summer.
I hope to God that under no circumstances does the NHL – and hockey become a summer Olympic sport.
But it's interesting because if you hear more and more players, like Jonathan Taves was asked about it, and Jonathan Taves saying was basically say it's a misrepresentation to have hockey at the, quote, highest level, i.e. the Olympics, and not have it be played by NHL players.
And you know what the NHLPA, who's, you know, you have heard from players individually, but we know that the NHL wants to stage exhibition games overseas in China this coming offseason.
Well, they've had games in the past in Asia.
They have.
Japan.
In Japan before the Nagano Olympics.
Yeah.
And the Jets, in fact, in the early 80s, went to Japan, I believe. But the NHLPA will say, you know, can say to the NHL, look, you want us to go to China to play some exhibition games during training camp? We're not going. Well, our players don't agree unless we're also going to the Olympics in 2018. So the NHL owners do not have a ton of leverage in this situation because they already have displayed that they're not a unified front. They know that the players want to go. The owners want to go to this, you know, make some money at this exhibition thing that they want to do in China. Well, the NHLPA holds all the cards, and I think the NHL is going to have to acquiesce to the players and to the IOC and to the IIHF in this instance, and they're going to end up rolling over, I think, and the NHL players are going to be at the Olympics.
Well, quickly, I was just going to add, I'm not even sure it's the NHL itself that doesn't, because they probably do recognize that it is an opportunity to, quote, build the brand, but they're beholden to the 30 owners. And eventually,
well, that's what I'm saying, Dave. I feel like there are, you know, 10 to 15 owners who really could care less about going to the Olympics, and then there's 10 to 15 owners that want to go to the Olympics, and there's a divide there. I don't know if it's exactly 10 to 15, but I feel like there are... You
name
know,
your Ted, source, Ginsburg. What is the 10 to 15?
Well, exactly. You know, Drew mentioned Ted Leontis is one owner who wants to go.
Yeah.
We don't know if Mark Chipman is one of those owners that would want the NHL to go. We don't know if Jeff Molson is...
Sure.
I mean, there are 30 different owners, 31 now. So, you know, Bill Foley is included there as well. So I just want to find out, you know, if the NHL is going to go, because I'm sick of talking about it.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is coming up next. Marty B. Ron, TSN hockey analyst, joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsburg, and Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Marty B. Ron. You know Marty as a former NHL goaltender and a current TSN hockey analyst. Marty, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Marty. Thanks so much for joining us on this Saturday morning.
It's the 8th anniversary of our radio show today, Marty.
I saw that on Twitter. I'm very flattered that I am part of this anniversary show. This is exciting.
Well, you're one of our favorite all-time guests, so we're super happy that you're on.
Marty, we obviously brought you on to talk about the world of the NHL and the world of goaltending. We're going to get to the Winnipeg Jets' three-headed goaltending monster, but I want to start with your old buddy, Henrik Lundqvist. You gave him some advice on TSN, I think it was on That's Hockey earlier this week, and obviously he took it to heart, came back on Thursday night with a 36-save performance, taking the Rangers and giving the Rangers a victory over the Sabres in overtime. What did you see from that performance of Henrik Lundqvist on Thursday that gave you confidence that he's maybe shaking out of these doldrums that are so unlike him?
Well, you know what? The things that I pointed out with Gino Red on that talkie were simple things, things that pretty much any goaltenders would be looking at, like your balance, how comfortable you are making saves. And a lot of times, Henrik would look at making a save and he'd be off balance or falling behind. He'd get beat on clean shots and you didn't used to see that. Now, he really looks back like his old self against the Buffalo Sabres. Still looks to me like he's overactive a little bit, where he's antsy, like he's trying to do everything so fast because sometimes your comfort level or your confidence is not there, so you're trying to overdo certain things. But his battle level was as high as ever, so he was always able to compensate for some of the failures that he had through his structure But I do think, and this is just my biased opinion sometimes because I see the Buffalo Sabres so many times as well, living in Buffalo and covering them also. The Sabres tend to make goalies look good at times, so and they seem to hit the logo in the chest more often than other teams, and maybe it's my, like I said, my biased opinion. So I want to see what Henrik does, how he responds, and how he continues on this confidence builder, because he had a pretty good go, a couple of good games right before the All-Star break, but it didn't really translate after that.
Marty, the last time we had you on was back in early December, and since then the Jets have recalled Andre Pavlik from the Manitoba Moose. He's played six games, and he's picked up four wins in those six games. What have you thought of the way Andre Pavlik has played and the three-goalie situation that the Jets have right now?
Well, the three-goalie situation is never going to be a good thing. Obviously, I think it was a last-ditch effort to try to get something going for the team to win some games in a desperate manner. Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson were struggling, and they, you know, a little bit like Henrik Lundqvist, and a lot of goalies have struggled this year. But when you have the experience and when you've been around the league for a while, sometimes you're able to stop that short. The two young goalies for the Jets weren't able to get back on track, so they needed to change something to trigger some new blood into the locker room. So, well, new blood, old blood, possibly. So they bring Pavlik back, and I think early on, it looked like the game was played at a faster pace than what he's been used to all year. So, but he battled hard, and he said in his first game, like, the guys picked me up. It probably took him about half the game to get himself feeling really comfortable. But I think what you're getting with Pavlik is you're getting what you knew you were going to get before. And that is the reason why he was sent down to the minors, is because he will make some big saves. He will give you a veteran presence. But there's always a couple times in the game where you see either him not making the save that you, the routine save that you would want him to make, or just even the big save at a key time of game, you're not getting that. But his numbers are not bad. I mean, you know, 4-2 as a goalie, you say, hey, it's pretty good. At the end of the year, if you play 60 games and you're 40 wins and 20 losses, you're doing pretty good. But the save percentage at barely 900 and the goals against average in the, you know, low threes, that's not going to work. So obviously, they're, part of it is the goalie, part of it is the team and the way they play. But if you look at Hellebuck's number for the year, they're a little bit better than that. So it's kind of like trading a you know, a dollar for four quarters right now. You're just hoping that maybe one works better than the other, but it's the same thing in the end.
And now, Marty, going to the other side of the equation, when you look at Connor Hellebuck, and now he's had a couple of weeks off to kind of retool his game, what sort of benefit would this have for a young goaltender to have that sort of time off to work with the goalie coach and really kind of get a chance to work on his game?
Well, one quote that surprised me with Connor Hellebuck when they called Pavlik back is he said he thought his game was 10 times better than what it was at the beginning of the season. And I'm like, well, if your game was 10 times better, we wouldn't be in this position right now. And it's not a knock on anybody, but it's just the truth, right? If your game is not where it needs to be able to sustain success in the National Hockey League. So the 2 weeks, I think, would have been good for a goaltender. And I'm looking at my past experience, how I would have handled it. It probably would have been a good time to just show the failure, show the points in Connor Hellebuck's game that are deficient right now and that need to be better, and that may be a good time to face the, you know, the music a little bit, to say, well, as a goalie, you always think you're the best, right? I mean, even when I was a backup to Henrik Lundqvist, I thought, put me in there, coach. I know I can win games. And, you know, I wasn't at that level of all-star, you know, gold medal, everything Lundqvist, but still, I felt that way. But sometimes that can be a downfall of a goaltender, to always think you're the best, to always think in a positive manner, and you get to press the reset button and, you know, kind of like Jake Allen had to do in St. Louis. I think the same thing with Connor Hellebuck. That may be a good time to really look at the part of your games that are not working well. Obviously, you know, you have tons of video, you have tons of example. You work closely with your goalie coach all year, and then you get to work your way back. Now, when he gets in the games, it's going to be fast, and it's going to be a little bit of second-guessing early on. So you got to make sure that mentally you're prepared, because it's not going to be an easy road back to be able to be to have some success in the National Hockey League.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Marty as a TSN hockey analyst. Marty, you're, of course, based in Buffalo, and it was a couple weeks ago now that there was a bit of an incident, maybe incident is too strong of a word, between Sabres goaltender Robin Lehner and Sabres head coach Dan Bylsma. When Bylsma pulled Lehner, Lehner did not think he was deserving of being pulled at that moment. What did you think of Lehner's reaction? Obviously, the angry glare that he gave to Bylsma through a little bit of equipment when he was pulled and got to the bench. What did you think of that whole incident as a whole? And, you know, being in Buffalo, Lehner's got a decent save percentage of .920, obviously a struggling team. But, you know, what do you know of Robin Lehner, the goaltender?
Well, Robin's a very intense guy. So you have to know that when things are not going well or if you get pulled, you are going to get an emotional outburst of some sort. Now, I'd much prefer if that outburst happens in the locker room, happens in the coach's room, where you're away from the fans, away from the media, away from the cameras, and you can deal with it in-house. But obviously, he wasn't happy with the situation, and he made a message. But that was a negative message. A few weeks before that, we saw Carey Price getting pulled in Montreal, and he came back to the bench and gave the coaches and his teammates a glare that was kind of a leader glare. It wasn't, I'm throwing my stuff all over the place. It wasn't, I'm pointing the finger at everybody. When Carey Price did it, it was a mature way to do it, a leader way to do it. And he approached it the right way. And I'm pretty sure Carey said what he had to say in the locker room after to make sure that everybody knew what was going on. And with Robin, it wasn't like that. So I didn't like it. I didn't like the situation that this is a big rivalry. Buffalo-Toronto, you're in Toronto. You're up 2-1, and you let in a bad goal to make it 2-2. You let in an okay goal to make it 3-2, and the coaches have a tough decision to make. They felt this was their best way for them to win the game, to make a change, that the momentum was slipping away, that the game was slipping away. Just, you're a pro. Go back to the bench, and then if you have a problem, you deal with it in the coach's room. So I didn't like that, but that is who Robin is. He's a fiery guy. He's an emotional guy, and you're going to get that. So that's why I think Bylsma didn't say anything. He just sat there and took it because he knows what type of emotional guy Robin Lehner is.
Marty, sticking with goalies and heading to L.A., where we just saw the best players in the NHL participate in the All-Star game, Peter Budaj has replaced Jonathan Quick as the number one goaltender. Jonathan Quick, of course, has been out of the lineup since early October with that lower body injury. As far as goaltenders go, is there a better story than Peter Budaj and his 24 wins, considering that he's been a backup for the majority of his career?
No, it's a great story, and I love that a guy like Peter Budaj, a hardworking guy who never said anything wrong about anybody, even when he was bouncing around from organization to organization, to get that chance. Years ago, the Canadians were playing in the playoffs, and you know, you look at it was Carey Price, and then it was Dustin Tokarski, the backup. It was Peter Budaj, number three, and it was Devin Dubnyk as a fourth goalie. And you get Dubnyk in Minnesota and Budaj in L.A. having an incredible season. And we all know what Dubnyk had to do to come back from being in such a turmoil after his Edmonton days. But, I saw the L.A. Kings practice their morning skate in Brooklyn the other day, and I watched Peter Budaj and his attention to details and his hard work and working with Billy Ranford, the goalie coach in L.A. It seems to be a great partnership. Obviously, when Jonathan Quick comes back, unfortunately, Peter Budaj will be watching it from the bench more often than not, but he just bought himself maybe a second go at it, a second opportunity to go into an organization, to be able to be a veteran presence, to be able to win some game, and you know, play another 2, 3, maybe 4 years in the National Hockey League. So it's a fantastic story for a good guy, and We should definitely praise those guys more, because there is good stories that are around the league, not just goaltenders but players as well, and it's awesome to see that.
Marty, you touched on it earlier, the situation in St. Louis and what's happened there, and they just released their goalie coach, Jim Corsi, from his contract, and they're using Marty Brodeur now in some capacity to help with their goalies. What kind of impact can a Hall of Fame goalie like Marty Brodeur help those young goaltenders in St. Louis?
Well, it's a weird situation. I mean, I'm a little skeptical that it's going to work. I think everybody's going to have a boost of energy, a boost of adrenaline with having, a change in coach, and that usually happens. But I've had Jim Corsi as a goalie coach. I think Jim is a really good teacher. But sometimes with other goalies, it doesn't work. I mean, he had a really successful career in Buffalo, Jim Corsi, that is, with Dominik Hasek, with Ryan Miller, with myself, and other goalies. So I think that was always really good. Now, I use Marty Brodeur, when I talk about Marty Brodeur as a goalie coach, I use Wayne Gretzky a lot, because Wayne was a field type of guy, right? When he played, he knew he was the best player ever to have played, but it was all about how he felt, how he would see the game, how he would read the game. But sometimes it's hard to translate that to players, right, as a coach. So that's why I think Wayne didn't have the success as a coach, and a lot of great players. Maurice Richard was tried to coach, and it didn't really work, right? Some those guys, they feel the game, they play the game like that. Marty Brodeur was the same way. It was all about feeling the game. There was not a lot of technical elements that you could say, okay, well, we're going to work on these things. We're going to work. It was all about, one day he would throw the two-pass sack. The next day he would throw the poke check, just because he felt the game and he read the game a different way. So I don't know that is the 2017 way of playing goalie, but maybe Jake Allen can be the one guy, because Jake Allen technically is not a good technical goaltender. He's more of a field goaltender. So that marriage may work, but I'm still skeptical that it's going to be a long-term solution. I don't think that's going to help the Blues fix their problem, especially in that.
Marty Biron is a TSN hockey analyst, a frequent guest on this program. Marty, thanks so much for your time this morning and all the other times where you've joined us here on the Illegal Curve
awesome.
Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Marty.
Cheers, Marty.
Thanks.
Head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Colorado Avalanche, the Jets, and the Avs coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Past the top of the hour, still to come on the show, Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Ezzy has disappeared again. Considering last time he came...
He's got a knife.
Oh,
we better watch out.
He's got a knife now.
He's got a giant knife.
Last time he came into the studio,
and
he tripped
fell.
Over his chair
yeah.
and fell.
Well,
now he's brandishing weaponry, and oh, good. He's cutting cake.
The only knife Drew should be using is this one.
Yeah.
A small plastic
knife. No, the only knife Ezzy should be... Yeah. It's like safety scissors for elementary school children. That's all you're allowed to deal with there, Ezzy. Ezzy cutting the cake as we celebrate 8 years of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. The Jets and the Avalanche, 2 o'clock this afternoon. The Avs are, we've talked about it, because really you can't not talk about it, but the numbers are amazing, and I don't mean amazing in the good sense of the word. One win since the Christmas break, 4 wins since U.S. Thanksgiving. The Avalanche have 16 fewer goals than the 29th ranked offense and are tracking toward allowing nearly 120 more goals than they've scored over 82 games. Only three teams over the last 20 years, including the inaugural Atlanta Thrashers back in 99-2000, have a worse points percentage than the Avalanche with their points percentage of .292 than they have compiled this year. Those three teams can at least claim it was harder to rack up points in the 1990s. The league average points percentage this year is an inflated .562 thanks to three-point games. This Colorado Avalanche team I mean, horrendous is really the most accurate word that can be used for them.
I thought you'd use unmitigated disaster.
I've used unmitigated. Yeah. That's two words. But
But I mean, that's generally a phraseology that would up your alley.
That would be right up my alley. You're right. But this team is, it's a must win for the Jets just because they're playing such a terrible opponent. If the Jets were playing against a top quality opponent and happened to lose this game, you would say, okay, they've won three of their last four. That's tolerable. But playing against the Colorado Avalanche and them being so woeful makes this a must win just because your opponent is that bad.
Yeah, and Drew, the crazy part to me is that it's like rats leaving a sinking ship. Everybody wants to be traded. And now players who generally wouldn't kind of broach the subject are being like, you know what, I'm fine leaving. Like if they trade me, they trade me. I mean, guys, do you remember when Duchene got drafted by Colorado, his reaction when he actually got drafted by the Avalanche?
I don't remember, but
well, he like fist pumped. Like he was so excited to be drafted by this Joe Sakic-led team. He was a big fan growing up. And now there's talk about, you know, him possibly not being a big piece of the puzzle moving forward. You just don't even know where to start. I mean, this Colorado Avalanche team is just such a big mess. And it's funny because they've been Cinderellas. You know, they've been taken to the ball and then they've been sent home and now they're being sent home again. I just don't even know where you start. I mean, I used the term earlier when we were talking about the Jets and whether their interest in trading. The Avalanche are actually in a fortuitous position in the sense that they are one of the few teams that can have a fire sale and they have the assets to trade and they can get back a lot. So from that perspective, I mean, it's going to suck if you're an Avalanche fan and you have to watch this team in the next few years. Like, it's going to be god-awful.
It can't be any worse than this. It can't be. At least if it's worse than this.
Drew, it could, because they could trade away guys like Landeskog, Duchene, MacKinnon. I'm not saying they're going to, but I'm saying, like, there's names that are being bandied about that are your upper echelon scorers because they need defense.
Sure.
So the fact is that you could see a worse producing, potentially, Colorado
yes,
team.
But at least there would be a game plan, as opposed to now where this team, which has high-end offensive talent on paper at least, is just so bad that they're unwatchable despite having talent. If you're bad and you're unwatchable because you have no talent, then at least you know that you're going to eventually, you've hit rock bottom and you're eventually going to trend upwards.
Drew, the only bigger mess than the Colorado Avalanche right now.
The mess you just made cutting this cake.
Yeah, I just dropped some on the floor, by the way.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Yeah,
can't we have anything nice?
Darren and Huss aren't going to be very happy with me when they see the mess
that I made. You're
going
to have to clean up.
But I'm going to offer them some cake.
Yeah, you're still going to have to clean up.
Yeah, I'll clean up.
Okay, good. Let me ask you guys this. Are you surprised that Andre Pavlik gets the start again for the Jets? Did you think that this was a good opportunity to get Connor Hellebuck another game after his last performance in Chicago before the All-Star break? Did you think that maybe this would be a good Connor Hellebuck opportunity?
Well, with the way Andre Pavlik has played in the last two games, Drew, I think you have to go with Pavlik against the Colorado Avalanche. And I was a little bit surprised that Connor Hellebuck didn't get the start against St. Louis, guys, and that's because he was very good, as you mentioned, against the Blackhawks in the first game, the last game before the All-Star break. But, I mean, right now, I mean, he started six of the last seven games, right, Drew? So, mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to continue to go with Pavlik. Paul Maurice has said, until one of the other goaltenders really gives him a reason to not start Andre Pavlik, Pavlik is their goalie for right now. And you know, it seemed improbable at the beginning of the season, Dave, with Pavlik starting the season with the Moose. But right now, you have four wins out of your last six starts, and you're making some key saves, and he made some key saves in Dallas. They're going to keep running with him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit surprised because this would be a game to boost Connor Hellebuck's confidence if that's what you're looking to do. Because, again, as we've just kind of outlined, the Colorado Avalanche aren't a very good hockey team, so it would be an opportunity for your young goaltender to, especially because he played very well against Chicago, so you'd think you'd come back with him. Again, we don't know what the plan is. I think maybe Coach Maurice is just saying, let's ride Pavlik, like as just talked about.
Well, and Dave, you've got, you know, sorry to cut you off, you've got Minnesota next Tuesday at home, the first game of a four-game homestand, mm-hmm. and then you've got Chicago and Tampa back-to-back next weekend, so you're obviously going to see Connor Hellebuck in one of those two games, you assume, but then again, Paul Maurice has gone with Andre Pavlik in back-to-back games, but I would expect Connor Hellebuck to start at least one of those three games of the homestand.
I don't think that there's any way they're going to go with Pavlik in a back-to-back Friday, Saturday next week.
Well, no, probably they're not. They're not doing that again.
Yeah. You can't sit. If you don't play Connor Hellebuyck today, and you're obviously not.
No. Nope.
And let's say the Jets are able to defeat the Colorado Avalanche, as most fans would expect. Probably go back with, unless Pavlik has a really bad game. You know, and not to say that he hasn't. I mean, his goals against average is over 3. So let's not get carried away in praising how fantastic he's been.
I don't think we were.
I know. I'm just saying. You know, I just want to make sure that that our cards are on the table. That means you're going to go over 2 weeks between Connor Hellebuck's last start, assuming he gets the start either Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
That to me is pretty long time for a goalie to be out of the net.
Right.
And then dropping him into a situation either against the Blackhawks or against the Lightning, both teams that have high-end offensive talent.
Andrew, that's what I was saying. So as you said, if Pavlik plays well this afternoon against Colorado, he'll most likely start on Tuesday against Minnesota and then maybe even play against Chicago. But Connor Hellebuyck has been very good against Chicago, so maybe they decide to put Hellebuyck in on Friday against the Hawks and then play Pavlik on Saturday against the Lightning. We're not sure, but needless to say, you don't want to go too long without seeing Connor Hellebuyck in the net.
As we dig into our cake as we celebrate our 8th year here on radio in
Winnipeg.
It's
a very good cake, by the way.
Yeah, you certainly seem to have been enjoying the cake.
You haven't taken a bite.
I'm going to take a bite momentarily, but as we go to break, let's remember and enjoy this clip from the Illegal Curve archives, September 7th, 2013, another great Ezzie-related story. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
I'm going to start off with a little preamble. I tend to make bad food choices, and I basically eat out for every single meal, lunch, dinner. I probably haven't grocery shopped in about a month.
But as we heard on last week's escapades, you came home late at night and you fried a hamburger and pierogies at 3 a.m.
Right. And so, admittedly, I don't make food choices, but, you know, for people who don't follow me, I kind of explained to this, and I was tweeting at a company we can't mention, but a couple of weeks ago, I literally had no food in my fridge, and all of the grocery stores were closed. So I happened to go to this convenience store thinking I'm going to get some items for the next morning's breakfast/lunch. And basically what happened with this apple is that...
What did you purchase?
Well, if you want all the items, it was a chicken burrito... It was Kraft Dinner.
In a box.
It was Kraft Dinner in a box. And I think it was the last one on the shelves. It was kind of dusty. And then there was also a 1 liter of skim milk. So, I mean, really, it's not that unhealthy.
And
I mean,
two apples.
Right, and the two apples. I mean, so the milk's healthy. The Kraft Dinner's healthy.
Kraft Dinner is recommended by all medical professionals.
What's wrong with Kraft Dinner? It's pasta and cheese.
A lot of margarine.
It works for me. I don't put margarine in it. I put a little bit of... I put margarine in it. But basically, what happened was, with one of these apples, I took it to work in the morning. By the way, everybody I work with has already heard this, because I did get food poisoning. Basically, what happened with this apple is I washed the apple at work. I was eating it in the morning for breakfast. You know, I like to have an apple or a banana for breakfast. And what ended up happening was I took another bite of this apple, like the second bite of the apple, and I bit into it, and it had this poisonous, rank, you know, taste to it. And I cut open the apple to see what was going on, and I tweeted it out. I've since deleted it. But basically, this apple had some type of, you know, growth or rot.
It was rotten.
It was a rotten apple.
A worm in there.
There was a worm in there.
It looked fine on the outside.
It looked fine on the inside.
I think it was just a rotten apple. Like, but, you know, fruit goes rotten.
Right,
it's
the thing that was interesting about this is it looked fine on the outside. When I took a bite out of it, it was clear that it had been rotten for like 2 weeks. And I have no idea how long this apple was on the shelves. And, you know, I was a little bit sick. But the moral of this story is that I'm going to buy apples at grocery stores and not convenience stores. And, I mean, I'm learning here.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, 25 minutes before the top of the hour. This segment brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. You know him from Mr. D. You know him from The Match Game. Darren Rose in town. 2 shows tonight. Get your tickets at RumorsComedyClub.com. illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Denver and welcome back to the program Drew Spivak. Drew is with Denver Sports 760 and the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast. Drew, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks once again for having me.
Our pleasure, Drew.
Drew, do you ever eat cake at 10 in the morning?
No, I'd like to. I bet you guys are eating a bunch of it today, aren't
you? Yeah, we're eating a lot of it. As he brought a cake, he brought a cake for 24 people that they recommended. There's four of us in studio.
Oh, that's awesome. But, hey, congratulations, guys, on 8 years of doing this show. Man, that's a heck of an accomplishment in this radio business.
Appreciate that, Drew. Thanks very much for your kind words and for joining us today and all the previous times as well.
By the way, Drew, it's our last year.
It's actually our last show. Eighth anniversary and last show.
Hey, it was a heck of a run, right?
Drew, we obviously brought you on to preview this afternoon's Jets-Avalanche game. And in the previous segment, you know, it's well known in the hockey world, you know, how bad the Avalanche have been this year. But we really were just going through the numbers. And one win since Christmas, four wins since U.S. Thanksgiving, you know, one of the lowest team points percentages that you're going to see over the last 20 years. I mean, what's the reaction in Denver and in Colorado to this team? Because we know what it is sort of outside the hockey world where just shake your head and looking at the amount of talent that's there up front and that they can't score and that they can't win. What's it like on the ground in Denver, the level of exasperation with this team?
Yeah, guys, I think it's mostly just embarrassment. I mean, just to see how far and how bad this team has fallen over the last couple of seasons, and just to see the way that it's all gone down this year. I mean, there was a point this season where these guys were 9-9, and you're thinking, okay, well, this isn't a bad start for Jared Bednar getting his first chance to coach in the NHL, and you know, you're starting out 9-9 after a really difficult schedule to open up the season, and then all of a sudden, it's like the wheels just completely fell off. I mean, since that time, they've won four games. And we're going back to, you know, middle of November now. They've won four hockey games. They've won one regulation game, you know, since December 1st, I think it is, the Toronto game back on December 13th, I believe it was. I mean, so it's just been absolutely dreadful. And I think it's a lot of just confusion because you go into the season, and I think a lot of fans were really optimistic with the coaching change and things like that. Looking at this roster, thinking that this team should be better on paper than they've shown so far this year, and just to kind of see it fall off like they have this year, I think everybody's just kind of embarrassed in knowing that this organization is the laughing stock of the NHL right now.
Drew, we're about 3.5 weeks away from the NHL trade deadline. If you're Avalanche GM Joe Sakic, how many moves are you making knowing that you're completely out of the playoff race?
Well, I think the hope is that you can make several moves. I mean, because this is a roster that you've got the ability to make some changes with right off the bat here. I mean, you got a couple guys that are going to be free agents next season. You got Jerome McGinley, who I know has been the big name kind of bandied about as being a guy that you could ship off and let him go somewhere else and have an opportunity to finally win himself a Stanley Cup. He's going to be gone next year no matter what. You got John Mitchell, who should be gone next year. He's going to be a free agent as well. Renee Borth, Andreas Martinsson, Fedor Tootin, Cody Golubev, guys like that are not going to be back next year. And you would assume that Joe Sakic is going to try and move those guys off the roster because, you know, we've reached the point in this season right now where they have to play the kids. They've got to look down in San Antonio and find out what they've got in certain guys. Find out if Chris Bjork can play at the NHL level. Find out if A.J. Greer and J.T. Comper can play at the NHL level. We saw A.J. Greer a little bit earlier on this year, and he played pretty well given his few games that he got to play this year. So, you know, they've got to find a way to move some of these veteran guys off the roster because we've seen that, hey, they can't play anymore, especially a guy like Jerome McGinley. It's kind of been sad to watch him really just kind of take a tailspin this year and not be the guy that we've grown accustomed to watching over the last few years. So they've got to find a way to get some of these guys off the roster and let the kids come in and get an opportunity and see if they can play because, you know, I think it's as bad as it's been for this team, if you look at some of the moves that could be made this offseason and, you know, with some of the guys coming up and with maybe Tyson Jones being a one-and-done guy in North Dakota, you could see a roster next year that looks completely different and would be a heck of a lot more competitive, depending obviously on what happens with either Matt Duchene or Gabriel Landeskog.
So, Drew, is there anything positive that can be drawn from this Avalanche season as of right now?
Honestly, no. I mean, I've been searching, trying to find something positive and a reason to really watch this team over the next, you know, couple months. And, you know, watching Mikko Rantanen slowly develop, I guess, maybe be the one thing. But I don't think a lot of Avalanche fans have been extremely happy with how slow his development's been a little bit this season. I think the one positive we've seen over the last couple weeks has been Matt Nieto, who they acquired off waivers from San Jose. He's come in and played on the second line with Matt Duchene and Gabriel Landeskog, and he's played pretty darn well this season. But there's just a lot of unknowns right now, and, you know, you look at certain guys, like certain stars like Nathan MacKinnon. Well, I think everybody expected him to take a big jump and a big leap this year, become one of the elite players in this league. In my opinion, I think a lot of other Avalanche fans' opinions, he hasn't done that yet. We're still waiting to see more from Nathan MacKinnon. So I think there's just a lot of negatives to take away. I can't really find any positives to truly take away from this team, and that's kind of the sad part of this whole thing.
Drew Spivak from Denver Sports 760 and the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Avs ahead of the Jets and the Avalanche 2 p.m. puck drop in Denver this afternoon. Drew, a name blast from the past, according to Adrian Dater of Bleacher Report, Pierre Lacroix, former Avalanche general manager, apparently interested in returning to the NHL. He was last involved in the league back in 2006. Do you expect that there'd be any interest from the Avalanche, you know, the current front office team, the current ownership, in bringing back a guy who was so fundamental and such an architect of the last time the Avalanche really had tremendous success as an organization?
Yeah, I certainly think it's possible. You look at this organization, and they've been known to make nostalgic moves in the past, obviously with bringing back Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh to kind of lead the front office over the last few years. And, you know, obviously it hasn't worked out quite as well for him. But Pierre Lacroix is a guy that, you know, everybody kind of knows around here, around the game, as being the main guy, like you said, that built this club into a championship team when they moved from Quebec. I mean, you know, his first 9 years here in Colorado, they won 9 division titles. They were one of the 2 or 3 elite teams in the NHL. But I think kind of the fear amongst a lot of people here is that, you know, he's a guy that did great things in an era where there wasn't a salary cap. He was able to figure out free agency. He was able to swing, you know, big-time trades, bringing in Ray Bourque and Rob Blake and, you know, Theo Fleury, and, you know, the list goes on and on and on about the big moves that Pierre Lacroix made. But I think the one thing that people look at and say, okay, once we hit the lockout, once he came back from that first lockout, what did he do after that? And the track record of success was not there after that. They could never figure out how to make it work in a salary cap world. And, you know, you look at the drafting of this team over the last, you know, 7 to 10 years, and a lot of that was under his watch. It was not very good. There were a lot of drafts where they missed on way too many guys that haven't had that much success. So I think there's a lot of people that are hesitant around here to kind of lean in that direction and bring back Pierre Lacroix. But I think it's something that the ownership could look at and say, this might be a good option. And I think the main reason why that could be is that this is an ownership group in the Kroenke family that doesn't really have a lot of experience in hockey. They don't know a lot of guys around the NHL, at least to my knowledge. They don't know a lot of the ins and outs of the NHL game. This has been a basketball family. They focused on the Nuggets. Obviously, they're focused on football with the LA Rams now, but they don't really know a lot of guys outside of, you know, Joe Sakic, Patrick Waugh, and Pierre Lacroix, who worked in the organization for so long. So I think that it could be an option, although I don't necessarily think it's a good or best option for this organization going forward.
Drew, I think you'd agree that Nathan MacKinnon has had a pretty mediocre season for a former first overall pick back in 2013. Is something else going on there with Nathan MacKinnon, or is this just a guy who's not having a very good year on a very bad team?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I mean, I think he has been a disappointment, and it's frustrating because you see the signs, you see the talent and the skill that this kid has. I mean, he's such a great skater. He's fast. He's explosive. He's a big guy that uses his body, uses his physicalness to create things. But the problem is, he just doesn't do it enough. And it kind of makes you wonder if he's just overall frustrated with the way things have gone this year. I mean, he's made comments in the media, you know, about how frustrating the season has been for him and for this team overall. And I think, you know, that might have some sort of effect on it. You could sit here and say, well, you know, he hasn't played with some of the best guys all season. He's been put on a line with Rene Bork and different guys that just aren't quite up to his caliber of play. And I think that's maybe had a little bit of an influence as well. But I don't think there's any question that he's been a bit of a disappointment. He's made a lot of Avalanche fans around here wonder why they decided to take him a couple years ago over Seth Jones, who's obviously having a great deal of success in Columbus.
Drew, in the early 2000s, Colorado was selling out every game, and you know they were averaging over 18,000 fans. And now you see that number, and they were always in the top 10 of the NHL. Now you see that number has dropped significantly, and they're in the bottom 10 of the NHL. Actually, might even be the bottom five. What's going on? Are fans just weary of mediocre teams? Are they not going to support a team if they don't have the product to merit it?
Yeah, I think that's definitely it. You know, Denver's a city where there's so much to do here. There, you know, you can go skiing up in the mountains. It's an hour drive to get up to a ton of major ski resorts around here. So there's a lot of different things to do during the wintertime. You can go and you can spend your days outside. We're going to be in the 50s and 60s over the next 2 weeks here. And so it gives people an opportunity to go do things outdoors and do other things around the city instead of spending a great deal of money to go watch a really bad hockey team. I mean, the tickets for Avalanche games have always been some of the priciest in the league, and that hasn't changed at all. And when you haven't been given an opportunity to watch a good hockey team night in and night out, people are just going to find other things to do around here. That's just kind of how Denver works with everybody except for the Denver Broncos, who everybody knows is kind of the king around here. So, you know, if this team can find a way to get better over the last couple of weeks and give fans something to come out for, then I think you could see things kind of turn around a little bit. But if I go back to a couple of weeks ago when the Blackhawks were here, I mean, it was one of those things where it was almost embarrassing for the home crowd because it was probably 80% Blackhawks fans in the building, which I know that's the case around a lot of different places in the NHL, but here in Denver specifically, it was just a really bad look on national TV to see that many opposing fans here instead of watching the Avalanche fans.
Drew, Falcons or Patriots tomorrow?
I'm hoping for the Falcons, but I'm kind of leaning towards the Patriots, guys. I think like New England's just got too much experience, and of course they got the man, the myth, the legend, Tom Brady leading the charge for them.
Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for Denver Sports 760. He's the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast. Drew, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Drew. Take care. Let's head to break. One final segment. We'll talk a little bit. We'll give our Super Bowl predictions. We'll do a little bit of which fans, according to the NHL players, which opposing arena is the best one to play in. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday morning, the 8th anniversary show here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll talk about our Super Bowl predictions coming up, but of course we want to remind you, the Patriots and the Falcons go head-to-head for the biggest prize in football with a halftime performance by Lady Gaga, Super Bowl 51, Sunday at 5 p.m., pardon me, plus CTV's Super Bowl Watch to Win contest gives you the chance to win amazing prizes, including two prizes of $50,000 and a grand prize of $150,000. For full details, visit CTV.ca/Super Bowl contest. And remember, many of the U.S. Super Bowl ads that people may want to see are already available. No need to wait for Sunday. Go now to biggameads.ca to check out new and past Super Bowl ads. The game 5 p.m. tomorrow on CTV. Predictions, gentlemen.
Do you think Lady Gaga is going to do Poker Face, or do you think she's going to do like Million Reasons? Like, what songs do you think she's going to do?
I have no idea.
Football predictions.
Football.
I should have been more specific, apparently.
I'm going to go with the former home of the Winnipeg Jets, the Atlanta Thrashers, the Atlanta Falcons. I kind of like the
Falcons. Like the underdog here.
Well, you know what? Look, I don't really care one way or another. I'm not really that vested in either team, but I kind of like the idea that Atlanta's never won a Super Bowl. I like Ryan. I think he's a good quarterback. Yeah, I mean, and New England's just, I mean, they just keep winning. They've won enough. When is it enough? So I'm going to go with Atlanta for my pick.
Drew, I'm with Dave M. I'm going to also take the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl. I'm a big fan of Matt Ryan, great quarterback. Julio Jones, arguably the best wide receiver in the entire game.
Our boy.
I realize that the Patriots, Roddy White.
Roddy White hasn't played on the Falcons, and he's been retired from the NHL.
Well,
from the NFL.
Well, I hope so, because he never played in the NHL.
Yeah,
but,
NFL.
I always liked Roddy White, but certainly Julio is, you know how good Julio is, Drew.
Yes, so Julio, correct.
I'm going to take the Falcons. It's going to be a close one. I'm going to go
Falcons 84, Patriots 7.
No, I'm going to go 28-21.
28-21, so they pull off the upset. I hate to disagree with both of you gentlemen, but I'm going to say that the New England Patriots are going to win yet another Super Bowl, and Tom Brady is going to, I already believe he's the best quarterback of all time, but he's going to reaffirm himself
as the best quarterback of all time. You don't really lose, because if Atlanta wins, it's a good story, because they're kind of they're the underdog and they've come from behind and never won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And if New England wins, then they just reaffirm what most people already think, is that they're probably one of the best teams to ever play NFL football.
I just wish that I like the Patriots. They've always sort of been, even back in the day from the mid 90s, they were always sort of my second NFL team behind the Vikings.
Easy to say that now, Drew.
Well, no. I had a New England Patriots.
I don't remember seeing you walking around in a lot of New England gear.
Drew's really driving that bandwagon right now.
I had
now.
A New England Patriots jacket back in 1994.
Starter?
I think. It might have been the starter jacket. It's quite likely based on
night. Hustler. I just saw walking around in a starter jacket.
What do you got, Huss, for a prediction for tomorrow?
Let's get Huss in here.
Or the Falcons?
Definitely not Team Trump. I'm rolling with the Falcons.
Yeah,
that's Huss, Huss beat me to it. That's what I was going to say. Is I wish that they weren't so supportive of the person who might end the world down south. That's really what's bothering me the most about the New England Patriots, is their support of the man down south.
By the way, Huss, take a piece of cake if you want.
Or 23 of them. Or 23 pieces of cake, as the situation might be.
By the way, Drew, I you can take the Patriots, but Tom Brady's not the greatest quarterback of all time.
100% he is.
Doug Flutie.
Hustler says Matt Nichols, and Ezzy says Doug Flutie. So, you know, we're already off to a good start. Jets and the Avalanche, that, of course, the focus coming up. Hustler and Lawless will have more pregame coverage. That's a 2 p.m. puck drop on TSN 1290 on TV on TSN 3
And it's unfortunate that Gary's not going to be doing the show, and it's going to be Darren bombing.
That's not unfortunate. We love bombing.
Well, no, it's not. I don't mean it like that. I mean it. How often do we bring in cake for Gary?
we'll send him some cake. You can hand deliver some cake to his house, of course. I think he has that restraining order keeping you about 50 yards away from his property.
No, it's actually 200 yards.
200
actually,
yards away from his house. In fact, you're not allowed into Tuxedo whatsoever, is really what the rule is at this point in time. Anyways, the Jets and the Avalanche, like I was saying, a key opportunity, a key game for the Jets just to continue the good performance that we saw earlier this week. Another one through the Central Division, another game against their Central Division opponent. The cautionary tales have been there for this team all season. They had that big lead in Buffalo where they were going for 3 in a row. They lost to the Sabres on a Saturday afternoon. They went into to play Arizona. They lost to the Coyotes. They can't take anything for granted, because that always seems to be when they run into trouble. So they have to go out, and if they play their game and they play... If they play like they played against the Dallas Stars, and if they play like they played against the St. Louis Blues, they shouldn't have any problem whatsoever with the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, on paper, the Jets should steamroll the Avalanche, but the Avalanche defeated the Jets back in November. That was a long time ago. But, guys, you look at the last three games, the Jets are on this three-game winning streak. The stat that stands out to me is the Jets have scored 14 goals in those three games. Mm-hmm. So Laine, Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler, Little, these guys are hot right now. If they can keep that going, I don't think the Avalanche have a chance.
Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jersey. Support those fine businesses, because they support Legal Curve. Big thank you to our guest, Drew Spivak, covers the Colorado Avalanche, Marty Biron, TSN hockey analyst, Anthony Sanfilippo of 610 AM in Philadelphia, and Tim Campbell of NHL.com. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Dave, you're doing color on the Moose game tonight with Mitch?
Yeah, I'll be joining Mitch.
Alrighty, that's available, I think, later on tonight here on TSN 1290. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless, for Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Al. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.